Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, scoundrels too. The latest episode of the Woke Bros. I'm your gracious host, Big Waz, also known as Wozni Lambre. Joined as always with my compatriot, my comrade, Michael Jamal Abdul Brooks. What's going on, Michael?
Hey, man. We're back. We've returned. I'm ready.
We survived them damn JV debates. We gonna get to that. As well as, man, this Epstein situation just continues to unravel. Me and Mike are going to get into the general just depravity of the billionaire class. And as will be our new customs, we will have a couple of cultural recommendations at the end of the show. Of course, make sure you get your tickets to Count the Dings live in San Francisco at the Independent. Tickets are going super duper fast. This is October 12th. I know it seems like a distance away, but the closer we get to the date, the faster them things move. And yes, you will be left outside. Do not hit my line. Do not tweet me. Do not text me. Do not hit me on Instagram. No, you're not getting in. If you miss out on this opportunity, make sure you get that. Of course, Marcus Thompson, of course, Andy Liu, of course, Sam Esfandiari as special guests with more to be announced on the way. Make sure you get your tickets at countthedings.com. Michael, tell them about the show in the shop.
Chicago, August 24th. We are at Lincoln Hall. I'm incredibly excited about this. We have Chuck Meritz, who is the host of This Is Hell Radio, which has been basically an underground college and community radio institution in Chicago. Now it's a podcast. He's a good, very funny lefty. We're going to have that. And if you have a sense, from the filled up, sold out to the tickets, LA and Brooklyn shows, we play games on stage. We have an incredibly fun time. If you are in the area, go get your tickets and get them quick. We're back now in our typical upsurge in the last several weeks, so they're going fast. And of course, you can also get a VIP ticket and come hang out with us for a couple hours beforehand. Besides that, please, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube, patreon.com/TMBS. Check all that out.
But first, we had another double dipper, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Mike, this will be the last double dipper, no?
Well, we don't know because it's still possible that everybody will if they get above 10 people qualify for the next debate, then there'll be another double header. But pray to God, this is the last one.
Yeah, and so Tuesday, not to sound dismissive of some of the other candidates, the any types, but Tuesday was basically a bunch of also-rans, like guys that are polling in the point twos.
Well, I don't know, but you had Sanders and Warren, so it was also right. The only people you want to hear from.
Facts, right? Which, I have my own thoughts about how CNN did that. But that was Tuesday's thing. And then yesterday, Wednesday, we're recording on a Thursday, y'all, was the more, a lot more name recognition. People like Harris, people like Booker, people like, obviously, Joe Biden. Quickly on Tuesday, I feel like Bernie and Professor Warren have decided on a sort of detente where they're just like, you know what, we can just squash these JV people and sort of move on with our lives. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, especially if we're going to call these things quote unquote debates. But it seemed to be a tack that they were taking with each other. Did you see that, Mike?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that basically what you had, and it was just so crazy. Like, I did a video actually for my channel about both why Bernie Sanders won the debate. He did an incredible job, but also going back to a book that Noam Chomsky co-wrote in the 1980s called Manufacturing Consent, all about how basically how ideology works in corporate media. And, you know, that CNN debate was such a perfect example of how, you know, I mean, as Bernie said, all of the questions about healthcare were Republican talking points, the whole skew of the debate. And it wasn't just that you had, you know, these ridiculous, irritating jokers like Hickenlooper and Delaney who, you know, have done so much to undermine progress in this country. It was that they were working in tandem with the moderators. So I think, you know, I have some bigger thoughts about Sanders and Warren in a second, but relative to that debate, they definitely teamed up. And that was, I think, definitely the right move because yep. You know, the truth is that there was, I mean, you know, again, there's big differences there, but at the same time, the way CNN went about it and the way they instigated, you know, these corporate joker candidates, you basically just had to have, you know, Sanders and Warren holding the line for actually doing things.
Right. And man, I want to say something too. I hate the framing, and I read Chuck Pierce's sort of roundup about the Tuesday debates, and he brought up something I thought was really interesting. He was like, we got to stop calling cats like Delaney a moderate Democrat. He's a conservative Democrat. There's nothing moderate about that dude, right? Again, back in the days, we used to have what you call a liberal Republican, right? Like way less conservative people who identified as Republicans. We don't, that doesn't exist anymore. And so because that only exists on the Democratic side, and because the media knows they can't do the both sides shit with Republicans, right? Like all Republicans are basically one and the same at this point. So with the Dems, because there is this variation, everybody who isn't Bernie or Warren is moderate. It's like, right. I don't understand that tact. Well, I do understand the damn tact. They're just trying to ostracize the two most liberal candidates. It just kind of gets in my craw a little bit. But besides that, yeah, I think it is important to squash these other people before they even get a chance to breathe, right? Like, we don't need to do this over and over again with these bum candidates. Obviously, you and I both believe, and I think this is a fact at this point, Bernie and Warren actually need each other's supporters, right? Like, they need to be taken from each other if either one of them is to succeed. So, you know, there's an unease that has to be between the two because it feels like they're drawn from the same pool, no?
Yeah, I mean, what's weird is that if you actually get into the numbers, like, there's a lot of really big differences in terms of who they're drawing from, right? So Bernie is pulling a much more racially diverse coalition, and it's filled with basically working class people from all backgrounds, right? Elizabeth Warren is definitely primarily, college-educated Caucasians. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, what is interesting to me is that, as is always the case, even though Bernie is just constantly lied about and smeared, he's actually doing the job of pulling like this actual multiracial working class coalition together. And also that, at least in the broader polling right now, like Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren have like, you know, Harris is my first choice, Warren's my second, Warren's my first choice, Harris is my second. Mm. Whereas actually Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders are going back and forth on a lot. And that's kind of interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. I have some theories about maybe why, but I do think, for what it's worth, I think you're totally right, though, in terms of like the opinion makers and
right.
you know, exactly. People like us who are kind of like, you know, like kind of do this, you know, that do this stuff for a living and are thinking about this and that. And, you know, my bottom line is that it wasn't the right time for Sanders to do that. And the tag team was cool and they both did a great job.
Yeah.
But at some point, we're going to need to be real about this from the perspective of really, you know, picking the truly transformative movement candidate. And that's definitely Bernie Sanders.
Right. And, you know, I think Nate Silver had a point where he was like, Bernie doesn't have supporters. He has followers. Right. Mm-hmm. Like he's a leader of a group of people. You know what I'm saying? More so than he has people who want to vote for him. Of course, those people, his followers, his supporters are going to vote for him. But he's like, I'm not sure how transferable that is onto other candidates. Right. Like the idea that you could get Bernie people onto your side as far as like going against Bernie, which I think goes in his favor, right? Like people who mess with Bernie Sanders really tend to mess with Bernie Sanders. And I think you see it in the amount of small donations he gets as compared to some of these other corporatist Democratic types who, you know, as Brother Cornel West so beautifully enumerated, he's like, look, man, you got a candidate whose base is like, ain't no billionaire super PAC funding him. And, you know, he's riding those waves. It's like, no, it's actually people, normal people sending Bernie Sanders money, their hard earned money, because they believe in what he's doing and they believe in his cause. So I think he's in good shape with that. And I think that's why you're going to see him hold steady in the polls. You're going to see him continue to raise money. I think he's still in good shape.
And he actually had a great night. Oh, I'm sorry. Yep. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I think you're right. Although I do think, you know, Nate Silver is another one of these twerps that is constantly carrying water for the Joe Bidens of the world. And I would just say it's more simple. Like, look, I think that all of the candidates have people that could be described of as like stans or followers, every sure. single one of them. And, you know, that's probably like a product of the social media age in some respects, right? So, you know, when I make the case for Bernie, I'm going to go hard for him because I, you know, he's obviously the best if you have, you know, a serious vision of things like, you know, democratic socialism and so on, right? But obviously, I mean, the man is not perfect. He's made mistakes and so on, and no candidate is perfect. What I would say is that he has a movement behind him.
Right.
And that's what's trackable with the fact that you have millions of people organizing and volunteering. You have people pouring money in. And you also have, you know, the incredible thing like that the campaign is doing things like using the email list to warn people about ICE raids. I mean, no one else is doing stuff like that. They have their own media infrastructure. I was a guest with his press secretary, Breonna Joy Gray, who used to be a regular on my show, you know, on the Hear the Burn podcast 2 weeks ago, talking about Bernie and Lula in Brazil. That's a whole different strategy. And by the way, this was another interesting thing to me in the debate. While Bernie and Warren were teaming up against all of these, I mean, and Jesus Christ, dude. I mean, John Hickenlooper and John Delaney. I mean, these people could not be any more just disgusting and repulsive. But you know, when they were teaming up, there were a couple of moments where Elizabeth Warren started to say, and we're going to have a movement. And that's interesting, right? Because that's the second area now that she's following and emulating what Bernie Sanders has already laid down. But it's an interesting recognition that even though like people like to kind of obsess about plans, you know, plans are great. But as, you know, Mike Tyson said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, right? And so if you go into Washington and whether you have a truly, you know, a really broad, full student debt cancellation, Medicare for All agenda like Sanders, whether you even have a smaller, more narrow progressive agenda like Elizabeth Warren, the weight of the world is going to come at you. And the only way to fight it is a movement. And the only one that has a movement is Bernie Sanders. And so I don't, you know, I'm just not going to allow, you know, as much I look, I like and respect Elizabeth Warren, but I won't allow her or her supporters to confuse that point. And I think, you know, but as far as just there was a couple of great highlights in the debate. You had Tim Ryan fear mongering about Medicare for All. He's another one of these, you know, less than also ran, you know, basically totally irrelevant candidates. I wouldn't even Google him. He was doing the whole thing that Joe Biden's doing, which is that if you give everybody great health care, then that'll somehow be bad for union people, which is a stretch. Obviously, most union people not only support Medicare for all would be an amazing advantage for workers because that would be one less thing that employers
that
could
they
hold
have
over.
To ask for. Exactly.
Yeah,
so people don't understand the concept of collective bargaining. Like this is a chip that employers use against you, right? It's like, well, we're giving you this, so you're going to have to give us back something. That's how that works. When you take that off the table, that's a big ass chip to take off the table. That works in a holy crap.
Yeah, no, it's wild. And so they have a great clippable moment where Tim Ryan's like, you don't know that. And Bernie's like, yes, I do. I wrote the damn bill.
Two things. They will be better because Medicare for All is comprehensive. It covers all health care needs for senior citizens. It will finally include dental care, hearing aids, and eyeglasses.
But you don't know.
Second
that.
Of all.
You don't know that,
second
Bernie.
Of all.
We'll come to you in a second,
I do know. And I wrote the damn bill. And second of all.
And then you had this other great moment where Elizabeth Warren looked at John Delaney and she's like, you know, I don't really understand going through all the trouble of running for president just to explain what we can't do.
Facts.
And so that was beautiful. I mean, the first night, we'll get to the second night, I guess, in a second. But the first night, at least for me, and I wonder your thoughts. I mean, on one hand, I was really happy because, you know, Bernie hit a grand slam. Warren hit a home run. They teamed up. They were great. Obviously, I thought it was the best, you know, for Bernie. And that makes me happy. But I was also just pissed, right? Like, you know, you had between the CNN with this Republican talking points, Republican moderation, endlessly throwing back to these irrelevant candidates. We just found out today that the main funder of John Hickenlooper's PAC is the Walton family. And it's like, okay, now I understand why this like weird guy who has like the demeanor of like a librarian who has a restraining order. Like, yes.
Meanwhile, one of Bernie's biggest supporters are Walmart workers.
Exactly. And so it was just so facts. So it was just so like annoying and disgusting. Like one other exchange I want to highlight really briefly, and this was another thing, Jake Tapper trying to bully Elizabeth Warren into saying she would support a nuclear first strike, which was disgusting in of itself. The governor of Montana was trying to play tough and obviously has no idea what he's talking about. You'd have to be an absolute sociopath to say you'd use a nuke first. Bernie said he wanted to jump in on this exchange. And they're like, no, we got to keep it moving. And then they went to Pete Buttigieg basically to be like, you know, do you want to take an opportunity to say Bernie's too old? Which actually, interestingly enough, Buttigieg didn't. So Buttigieg really is positioning himself to like be the guy that offends, you know, like that everybody
that offends nobody. Right.
Offends nobody. It was an interesting move. But that just really distilled how absolutely disgusting CNN was. That first they're trying to terrorize Elizabeth Warren into adopting an obscene position. Then the other only relevant candidate on the stage jumps in to talk about literally the existence of the planet. And they're like, hold up. We're going to try to cue somebody else up to say you're too old. I mean, it was just so disgusting and such bullshit watching these plutocratic hacks like Jake Tapper and Don Lemon. The only other thing I'll say about the first night, Marianne Williamson messed up by not supporting Medicare for All, but for what it's worth, I feel like clearly her mission is talking about race. And
she's doing a damn good job at that.
Yeah.
Her facility with the topic is, it's clear she's thought a lot about this. And she's ready to parry literally anything you have to say on the topic. She's clearly well-read and well-studied on the topic. You know what I will say, though, Mike, as far as the Nate Silvers and the other sort of pundits who like to harp on moderates and their fetishization of splitting it down the middle and being moderate and blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of people in the party who need to be brought along to where we're at right now, right? When it comes to the sum of the whole of Democratic voters, there's a sizable amount of people who are like, well, hold on now. Can we really do that? Should we really do that? You know, who need to be brought along. And I think that's the point of a damn campaign, right? Is that you explain to people, like, this is what we need to do. Bottom line is, there was nobody talking about universal health care before Barack Obama started his candidacy, right? Like, it's not like that was 100% going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like that was 100% going to happen if Barack Obama didn't bring it to the fore, right? So I say that to say, but he was able to do it, right? He was able to bring the mass of the party on board to the position of, yo, we should have universal health care in the richest country in the history of the freaking world, right? So I think that is the job, of course, of Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and whoever wants to call themselves freaking progressive, is to bring our people to this side, to where you and I stand on this issue. So, you know, I get it. Those people do exist, right? Like, who are like, I don't know. You know, and like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and we've met those people. We know those people, Mike. You know what I'm saying? So they do need to be brought along. But like I said, it was a big night for the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, in my opinion. And I just, man, I just love seeing a conservative Democrat get stuck to, man. Like, oh, Lord. So we can move on to last night, Wednesday night, which was fuck Joe Biden night, for lack of a better term.
That was definitely fuck Joe Biden night.
It was so clear. It was so obvious. Everybody was like, let's take this Joker down. And I do want to say this, Mike. I'm telling you, Joe Biden is not long for this campaign, brother. He's the favorite right now, but he's not good at this. He's just not good at defending himself. He's not. He has the name. He's very popular. He's very famous, but he is not good at anything else. As it pertains to running a competent campaign, this shit is long. This shit is hard. It's arduous, bro. I don't know if he got it in him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, that's really interesting you say that, because I've definitely been of the school, and I even last night before the debate, I'm trying to say to people, like, you know, especially in these bubbles, like especially in like some of the, you know, especially kind of like some of the worlds that I'm around, there's such a bubble about Joe Biden, and everybody thinks that, you know, whether it's, you know, coming from many different angles, that Joe Biden sucks and he'll implode and people will see that really quick. And I've always tried to say that, I mean, look, and obviously, of course, Joe Biden is everything that I loathe in the Democratic Party. His record on credit cards, on Iraq, on, you know, trade, you know, praising Strom Thurmond, Anita Hill. I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, of course, right? Drones, cutting Social Security and Medicare, all of this stuff, but trying to with Obama. But I've always still maintained that, like, look, first of all, some of these things, like, you know, that people get tripped up about Joe Biden are not going to trip most people up, and it's not going to be a problem for him. And also a lot of things that, you know, you may or may not like that style, but he does have a certain kind of like old style Irish politician charm. And there's a lot of people voting in Democratic primaries, you know, who are not, you know, firing away on Twitter all day. And that's like, you know, who Joe Biden's speaking to. So I've maintained that. Now, I think on one hand, there's certain areas, particularly, as I say, on things like credit cards and so on and bankruptcy, where people could really start to take chunks out of them. And the criminal justice and being a huge promoter of prisons and all the rest. But the thing that I'm going to say from watching last night, and I don't know, like, you know, I'm just going to say it. I guess this isn't, you know, necessarily that diplomatic. But I'm watching it and I'm really starting to be like, OK, is this dude literally like all there? Like, is he physically, psychologically up for this? Right. Like, I had, you know, if you watch Joe Biden even 4 or 5 years ago, and again, I'm just talking purely on style, there wasn't a moment, like, in fact, not only would you not think that, you would think, what a kind of like spry, youthful, you know, 70-something. And right. and especially, you know, in the race, of course, you know, there's a huge double standard. If Bernie did half of the slip-ups Biden did, MSNBC would be talking about it, you know, ad nauseum, obviously, even as they ignore his good numbers in fundraising. But I just think that I was watching Biden last night, and I maintain the caution that I always have of, you know, his popularity and durability, but I'm just seeing it. And it's like, and also even to the point for the first time where I'm getting like, oh shit, like Donald Trump be like, what? The T-I-P-P, Joe? You know what I mean? Like, I had the first flashes last night. I'm like, oh, yeah. Fuck. Yeah, no, you know what I mean? Like, he just doesn't look that on it. And, you know,
I think what a lot of people are remembering is 2012 and what he was able to do to Paul Ryan, who
right.
Joe Biden so clearly recognized as a lightweight, like a dude who is just way out of his depth. And he's like, oh, I'm going to destroy this guy. It's not even that you're on the wrong side of the issues. Like, you don't have it. You can't dance, brother. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's what a lot of people are remembering. This ain't that. This is a whole different ball game and arena. And when he's just getting bopped over the head and bopped over the head and bopped over the head over and over. And again, this is we just at the start of the start, Mike. Like, we're right. really at the beginning of the beginning. And to see him just looking woozy, man, I'm just like, look, Joe, this is a long campaign, bro. This is a long campaign, man. This thing gonna be going till next summer. So, man, I don't want to sound encouraged. It's just like I feel like there's a reason he's failed at like 12 other presidential runs. Like, there's a right. reason That's for a like, point. You know what I mean? Like, for all his strengths, as far as his likability, his charm, you know, the gentle white guy affect that he has, like a nice boss affect that he has.
The nice boss affect. Boss affect is not on brand for 2020 in the Democratic primary.
I don't think so. It doesn't feel like it is, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is his moment, and I get it. If he didn't have, you know, his predilection to just fuck up, I think this shit would be a cakewalk for him because he's so popular and he's got a shit ton of money behind him that he would just kill everybody behind money and his fame and popularity. But shit, man, the way it's looking right now, I don't know if he got it. Obviously, you and I don't believe he should have ever gotten a race. I thought it was completely, you know, I just feel like it's like, yo, so full of yourself of like, yo, the world needs me right now. It's like, actually, man, I don't know. I don't think you're reading the tea leaves, my bro. Like, I don't think that's where we're going. But yeah, I was encouraged by last night. I'll say that. Right. As somebody who does not want to see Joe Biden succeed, I was encouraged.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, I think basically, like, I'm not ready. I'm too much of a pest. It's funny, like, I'm not as convinced as you are that if he was on point, he would destroy everybody. But on the flip side, I'm still not totally comfortable that he's out yet. But I will say that, yeah, I mean, between the fact that there's just so many problems in his record, some of which will have big salience for people, and the fact that he just looks like, I mean, yeah, he looks woozy. The dude ends his own times. Like, you know how on these things, like, these people are always thirsting for more, senator, time's up, governor. This guy literally, oh, my time's up. Like, he is so desperate to just say Barack Obama, flash a smile, and you know, wear out the clock. And it just isn't the environment. You know, I mean, even like, you know, Jay Inslee, who's probably like my favorite of like the, you know, the low tier candidates for sure, because of, you know, talking about global warming and union jobs and all of that. He seems like a decent dude. Like, he scored a nice point on Biden. Cory Booker slayed Biden. Kamala Harris scored some points, although I would say Kamala Harris had a bad night herself. Yeah, and I think
night.
That
bad night,
you
Kamala.
Know, I got to say, I don't care who delivered it. Tulsi Gabbard smoked her on her criminal justice record. And we can always get into the complications with Tulsi. That's irrelevant. She delivered that blow. And Kamala Harris had the whole bullshit, like, you know, social media clout, like, well, I don't just make speeches. Well, first of all, every politician makes speeches, so I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about.
What you're talking about?
Yeah, that's just nonsense. And secondly, what Tulsi was saying is that you put tens of thousands of people in prison for nonviolent drug offenses. You didn't even try to help exonerate people that clearly were free that you had put in jail. Yep. And you were an ardent drug warrior, a promoter of carceral policies, which, as we all know, are race and class based and have caused an unbelievable amount of reinforcing institutional racism and also just broad based institutional suffering. Like, I just want to say really quickly, like, there was a video that came out 2 days ago. I couldn't even watch it, right? And in this case, this was a white man who had schizophrenia. This is in Dallas, right? He called the police because he was like having an episode. God knows why you call the police. This is another example of how horrible our society is in terms of mental health care. So whatever reason, he's calling 911. I'm really scared. I'm freaking out. These officers came, restrained him, put him in chokeholds. He's kept begging them, I can't breathe. And then they made fun of him. They thought he was passed out. And they were joking about, oh, we'll wake him up and give him breakfast later. Ha, ha, ha. They had killed him. They killed him. And, you know, I just say this point to say that, like, I mean, you know, one, I guess it's just so disturbing and sociopathic. But, like, all of these people, like Bernie voted the wrong way on the 94 crime bill. Although, again, he did still say, you know, at the time, I see the problems with this, even as at the time everybody was voting for bills like that across the board. Yeah. But Joe Biden and Kamala Harris specifically, Joe Biden is the author of this shit, and Kamala Harris has been a top enforcer. And she had nothing on it, man.
Yeah, and well, she made the decision early on to, you know, sort of embrace and hug her record as a district attorney, which... Oof, that's a tough choice, right? Like, sometimes some people go the other way and just, like, for instance, Mitt Romney, because he had to run for president of Republican people, had to run away from passing health care in Massachusetts, right? He made that choice. He was like, these are the people I'm trying to win the nomination from. I'm going to run away, literally the signature achievement of my life. Of my career, right? So he made the choice of doing that. I think Kamala Harris decided to go the other way and was like, no, I worked hard to become a prosecutor. I'm going to defend my record. And it's going as poorly as anybody would imagine it going in this particular primary, right? I can imagine a time in, say, maybe the year 2000 or 2004 where, you know, in a Democratic primary, that might be actually in your favor, that you were, quote-unquote, tough on crime. Because back then, Democrats were always trying to run away from the idea that they were all squishes, that they were all pansies and sissies and all of that. So I can imagine a time, you know, only 20 years ago, 15 years ago, where a Democrat might be proud of doing locking people up. This ain't that time, and she's getting destroyed. The winds have sort of shifted, and you can see it. Even Republicans are talking crime reform these days, prison reform these days. I don't know how sincere they are.
What did you think of that broader arc of Kamala Harris's career? Because to me, it's like, yeah, everything you just said, and also that, like, She does have, like, a certain type of very polished charisma, but it's like, it seems so plastic that it's like, I think where I feel for her is, like, you know, in the 1990s, I mean, again, we're in this paradoxical time where there really is a little bit of movement. I mean, we have, you know, we have a fucking Klansman in the White House, but then on the other hand, the Democratic Party, I think, definitely would nominate a woman of color, right?
Right.
Whereas in the Clinton era or even the Obama era, that wasn't going to happen. But, like, the way that she's charismatic, that she is of that time. It's glib. It's bullshit. It's, you know what I mean?
And I have a, when you talk about her career arc, it seems pretty obvious that she's always been leading up to this moment, right? Like the reason right. you run for to be a prosecutor, then you either go to governor or senator, and then you do this. Like it's obvious how it's charted. But this is the thing, though. While you're in that job of, as a prosecutor, waiting for your next thing to run for, you actually have to do the job. And that's what I think the problem that she's run into, right? Like, while she was on the road to being the first black woman president, she had to do the job of being, you know, a prosecutor, basically a cop. And, you know, that's a dirty job, man. That's a dirty job, specifically, like you said, coming out of the 1990s and our attitudes towards crime and drugs and the war on black people. I mean, the war on drugs or whatever. You know what right. I mean? Like, right. Things have shifted right. underneath her feet. And I think she's dead in the water, man. Like, she's a,
you think she's done. Done.
Yeah, she's a dead woman walking. She's finished. Stick a fork in her.
That's fascinating, man. You think, that's really interesting because you think Harris, like,
yeah, she's done.
Yeah,
she's done. She tried, and even her little bump that she got after she had the moment with Biden about busing and this and that, like she's already in the polls. You see it. She's already come back down to earth. She's not in it to win it. Like she's gonna last because she's still able to get some money. So she's going to carry this thing out, but I don't think I think she's finished as far as the candidate is concerned. But, you know, whatever. It's good to run for presidential, sign $1 million something book deal and do her thing. I don't feel sorry for her, but I think she's finished.
You know, I think the only reason I'm not sure she's finished is I think that if that Biden implosion happens, which is seems more and more likely, there's going to need to be a, you know, there's going to be someone where all that money can go.
Right.
Yeah. And I just think that, you know, I don't think that, you know, I think Buttigieg, like, it's just not going to happen this time. And Cory Booker.
But see, that's what I think Cory Booker so, like, is the Biden adjacent. Right.
Oh, you think Booker's going to get it?
Yeah, he's a Wall Street bro. Come on. He's Biden adjacent. That's why. That's why I really think she's finished, because Cory Booker he's more ready to fill that void for Joe Biden. You know what I mean? He's a dude, of course. And again, like he's of the moneyed class, like he's of those people. So, you know, the Wall Street people will have no trouble getting behind that dude.
Oh, definitely. Without a doubt.
They're going to be like, oh, man, hell yeah. Hard. Hell yeah. You actually used to be a bloodsucker like us. Hell yeah. Here you go, brother. Let's go. Let's get on this horse. So, I mean, you know, I think he had a decent night, too.
Oh, definitely. What did you think?
I just thought he finally got to show off like the few, you know, I'm anti Cory, but I've always been anti Cory Booker ever since. He gave that. I've been anti him, but then he gave that fake Obama speech in 2016 at the convention. I was just like, yeah, this dude is a clown, man. This guy's embarrassing, yo. You know what I'm saying? But I thought the few charms that he has, he was able to get him off. He got a couple of quips off. Of course, he got off on Joe Biden. So I thought he had a good night, and he, you know, he acquitted himself quite well. So I think he got a decent push. And like you just said, Mayor Pete, he had a bad week, man. Mayor Pete had a bad week. And, you know, I know that brought a smile to your face as it did to mine. So, again, I think Booker's rising.
Yeah, you might be right. I'm not really – I'm still not convinced because he's been such a non-entity so far. But it's interesting to me that he's really – you know, Cory Booker's always been corporate hack / cornball / you know, stuck in 2005. But I definitely have noticed in the past couple of weeks, you know, I mean, he's adaptable. He knows how to kind of maneuver, and he's it seems like for the first time he's figuring out a way to do his like, hey, I'm like a positive dorky guy, but also I will fucking slash you. And, you know, I think that is actually what he needs to show. I just want to say, too, like, on one hand, it was great because de Blasio literally got protested with Fire Pantaleo, and that was awesome because he should feel all sorts of heat about Officer Pantaleo and Eric Garner. And at the same time, even though Bill de Blasio, as you know, with police, with gentrifying, with public housing, you know, he's got some things to talk about. Universal pre-K was a great accomplishment, but you know, he is not the candidate that he's running as, but that's fine. Like, right. De Blasio got a lot of hits in on Biden last night, and
he, you know, was thirsty.
They're holding the fort on progressive shit, and you know, it was good.
It's crazy, right? To remember the promise of de Blasio that right. he was this going to be this progressive hero mayor of New York City. Like, it's hard to remember it now, but when he won, you know, all the right people were sick to their stomach about it. So we were all excited. And it just hasn't turned out that way. And I think, you know, last night was a reminder of the guy that he used to be in all of our minds anyway, before he had to actually, you know, govern.
Let's also just say, I just want to say real quick, well, I already said shouts to Jay Inslee, but yeah, Pete Buttigieg, I mean, actually, he was okay at the debate. I thought he was better at this debate than the first one, but the real reason that he lost, footing. Yeah, because he's got nothing. He's empty, yeah. Man. He's just a kid who knows how to test well. He's too many extracurriculars. And what I loved was, I mean, he's trying to get on. Apparently, there was a BuzzFeed event, and Pete Buttigieg was ready to go, and his condition was that he and Lil Nas X do a rendition of that fucking cowboy song together.
Yeah, Old Town Road.
Lil Nas X rejected it. So a win for him and a loss for Mayor Pete. Sorry, Mr. Extracurricular Activities.
And but I mean, ride my wave, homie.
Like, you know, so many pages on a resume type of guy. What were you gonna say?
No, Lil Nas had to tell him, "You're not gonna ride my wave, brother. I don't know you. I don't know what you about. I get it. We both gay, but let's move on, okay? You do your thing, and I'ma do mine. Wave jumper, get out of here, Mayor Pete. Oh, this feels so good."
I mean, that's actually really, it's funny though, because like, you know, whatever, like, I don't want to get too deep with it. 90% of it is, you know, just a candidate I don't like got faced by a great pop star who, by the way, I'm very impressed by how Lil Nas X handles himself. But there's something more, like, I just recorded a TMBS episode for our patrons that'll come out in a couple of weeks about really getting into Pete Buttigieg and race and South Bend and policing. And to me, there is just something so, you know, he is the perfect conventional liberal with a massive racial blind spot, if you're going to put it, you know, diplomatically. And just that fusion of like that record. And then the fact that it's like, oh, yeah, he's trendy, he's gay, I'm gay, let's do a song. Like, ugh. You know, like, ugh.
Yeah, he's Pusha, ugh.
Pusha, ugh.
Speaking of problematic, this Jeff Epstein thing just continues Ooh. To just, Lord have mercy.
I need to use a different word than problematic.
It's disgusting. It's crazy. You know, New York Times runs a story where they're reporting that they spoke to, you know, four people close to Epstein, and he maintained close relationships with a couple of Harvard scientists, like, you know, reputable people in the scientific community, because he was trying to get on spreading his. He's trying to germinate the earth with his seed, like the idea that he's going to improve the human race by just having a bunch of babies with a bunch of elite women. Like, you can't make this stuff up, right? The idea, by the way, Mike, the funny thing is, this is the arrogance of this class of people. Right. This group of people in our country, essentially the people who run this thing, who actually make all of the rules that we follow. This man is a pedophile, a pimp, a fraud, and he thinks he's so great that having more of his progeny and offspring is going to improve upon the planet.
Yeah, man. The thing that's just so crazy about, like, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at this to me. Like, so as an example, when Alex Costa, right, who had to resign as Trump's labor secretary because when he was a prosecutor in Florida back in 2008, he gave Jeffrey Epstein a sweetheart deal on raping children. Like, I just want to be real, you know, like, this isn't even, I mean, we're so used to the, like, of course, the fact that we have a two-tier justice system and, you know, Wall Street banks and everybody else get away with fraud and illegal dealings, of course. But this is like, you know, I thought being a pedophile was probably still an area that people could kind of like get behind being opposed to. But of course not. That's naive. And one of the things, though, that was interesting that there hasn't been much follow up on, though, is that Alex Costa supposedly said when he was asked about it, when he was getting vetted for Trump, which was that, well, I was told to not go too into it because he was intelligence, quote unquote. Right. And there's some really interesting reporting about both possibilities that he actually was an asset for the FBI, one that he was an asset for Israeli intelligence. And the thing that's really weird about Epstein, right, is like, I feel like on one hand, okay, we've got to like debunk conspiracy theory culture and, you know, discourage people from looking at the world in that conspiratorial way because things are usually, you know, they're not as linear, they're more complicated, whatever. But it's like, here's a guy who was a human trafficker, yep, who, you know, and we don't know, like, we know Alan Dershowitz has been accused. We know a member of the British royal family has been accused. We actually know that there's one accusation that came out against Trump specifically that kind of went away, but in 2016. But like, this dude was a systemic and globe-hopping human trafficker. On his flights were Bill Clinton, he was tight with Donald Trump, but also, you know, Steve Pinker and all of these people across the elite. And I'm guess what I'm saying is, like, you don't even have to go. Like, it could be that, you know, they had no idea, right? Like, those were the flights that nothing bad was going on, okay? But the basic context that you have this kind of wealth and this kind of access, and the fact that if you have wealth, you can get anything with no oversight. And the fact that even a couple of years ago, after everybody already knows who Jeff Epstein was, who he was, that Ehud Barak, who's the former Israeli prime minister, is taking investments in his company from him. I mean, it really shows you, it's like, there is just this systemic rot in the core of capitalism. I mean, that's Jeffrey Epstein, man. Like, yeah, it's bigger than Jeffrey Epstein.
Come on, bro. He's the perfect child of capitalism.
Yes.
Like, are you kidding me? And the thing is, and when I do want to touch on some of the conspiratorial aspects of this story, the bottom line is this. This guy accrued a massive, massive amount of wealth and influence and access, and he ostensibly had no job. Like, his company didn't do anything, right? Like, he wasn't, like, his hedge fund didn't actually invest or trade anywhere. He just got a shit ton of wealth. And so we have to ask the question, why? That's, like, it's kind of obvious, right? Like, we can say what we want about, say, a Bill Gates or a you know, Larry Ellison or Bezos. Like, we know how they got rich. We still find them to be contemptible, because to be a billionaire basically is to be a contemptible person. But we know how they got their money. This guy got money for nothing. So we're supposed to believe he obviously got money for something. And we need to know what that something was, because I think it speaks to, like you said, it speaks to the heart of capitalism and it's just depravity. You know, it's just like, again, yeah, like his sweetheart deal in Florida back in 06 is just a symptom of the problem. Right. He's rich, has access. And so therefore he can skirt the rules on child abuse and pedophilia. Just think about that. Just think about the system, man. Like, wow. Holy shit. You know, but yeah, right. I'm going to continue to keep my eye on this. I'm actually waiting on Jade to get on this. I could tell he hasn't sort of dug into this yet. He's preoccupied with some other things, but I'm looking forward to hearing Jay do his deep dives on
Jeffrey Epstein's an animal, dude. He's a UFO. There was a guy named Bob Epstein who was at Grassy Knoll.
It's all related, dude.
It's all related, dude.
Rob, we got to put out an APP.
Epstein was at, he was at the moon launch, because that happened. You guys are
There's actually two Epsteins, guys.
Guys are gullible.
He's stupid.
But the thing is, like, it's like, what? It's like, you know, what do you want me to say? Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like the, I don't know how to tell people, like, you know, again, there's all these conspiracies and all these lies, but then on the other hand, it's like, yeah, like,
yeah, exactly. That's what
was
this
arguing,
is,
like, with some of all the world's major politicians, scientists, academics, and Hollywood people. Yes. And then he didn't pay for any of his crimes. That is right in our faces. I mean, shit.
I think we need to put out an APB. We need to come up with the name of this segment. Obviously, it's an homage to Two Dope Boys Digging in the Crate segment. I always a crowd pleaser and a favorite. But this is the segment where we recommend something. Mike, I want to hear what your rec is for this week.
My rec is the documentary that, if people haven't seen it yet, I feel like a lot of people have seen this, but it might have been a wave now for the past couple of years where people haven't caught it. But the documentary When We Were Kings, about the George Foreman Muhammad Foreman Ali fight in Zaire, now the Congo. That's just an incredible documentary that really introduces you, I think, to a lot of different threads that matter. In terms of entertainment, sports, post-colonialism in Africa, but also the corruption of, you know, like the CIA-backed Mobutu Sese Seko, who assassinated Patrice Lumumba, who's one of our great leaders, that, of course, another victim of the CIA and the Belgians and so on. There's a ton of just amazing footage of Muhammad Ali just as a personality. He is one of these figures in our culture that matches the hype.
Yep.
Incredible performances, James Brown and B.B. King. It just seemed like and great commentary from Spike Lee and Norman Mailer. I think it's like one of those, you know, like, it would have been really crazy and fascinating to be there, and you kind of at least can get a little bit of a sense of it. And I just used to rewatch it all the time. I'd recommend it to everybody. Very, very in this keeping with the show.
Man, my first – I got a couple of recommendations. My first one is the Joe Rogan podcast with Cornel West.
Oh, my God.
That came out a week ago.
Dude, Cornell's the best we have, man.
It's beyond words. I'm sorry. Like, I watched this thing straight up 2 hours nonstop just watching this dude speak. The depth of knowledge, the amount of shit this guy has read and absorbed and just on command can apply to so many different things. It's incredible. And he's just such a warm, charismatic spirit. It's insane. And again, like, Joe Rogan is somebody who, you know, I found out that he was libertarian. I heard that he's disavowed those views. But years ago, I found out he was libertarian, and I was kind of like, okay, I'm off this dude. Because right. To be a libertarian is to basically be a complete and utter idiot and douchebag asshole. And I mean that. Like, I seriously mean that. There's no other way to achieve libertarianism. So I was off of him. But of course, you know, his show is deeply popular, and, you know, he tries to have different views and different type of people on. And of course, when I tune into Mike and I tune into Majority, oftentimes he's talking to their mortal enemies and whipping boys. So that's when I only get to catch up. But then I saw that he had Cornel West on. I was like, OK, I have to watch this. And it was just incredible. Like, it just does not disappoint. Not a moment when he's talking about, you know, rhythm and blues from the 70s. And he's like, it's just, this dude is incredible. He's a virtuoso. He's a treasure. We are lucky to have him, man. I would encourage everybody go watch that. Like, that thing made me laugh, brought me to borderline tears in moments. Like, it was insanity. It was incredible. I can't recommend that enough.
He's the absolute best that we have. I just got to plug real quick. I'm sorry. I just have to, because I did my whole opening commentary on the 100th episode of TMBS on Joe Rogan and Cornel West, that exchange. And then also more broadly, how Cornel West just gives us the answers to everything in terms of, like, the spiritual dimension, understanding, the economic realities with the history of race and genocide in this country, and then also a perfect antidote to all of the toxic cancel culture, moralistic, you know, crap, takes that you hear all the time. Cornel West, I mean, he just weaved every single thread, man. I did that commentary. I hope people will check that out, because I connected it with some other things that are worth thinking about, you know, especially if you have, like, socialist politics. And yeah, man, I just hard cosign, man. Just watch. You can just go online and watch Cornel West just lecturing at universities and forums across the world. And he's just brilliant, the spirit. I mean, it's what we need. What we need.
And, you know, finally, my final recommendation, maybe about an hour before we started this recording, Drake announced via his Instagram that he's coming out with something that he's calling the Care Package, which essentially is he's tying up a bunch of the loose songs that he's put out, basically unreleased, quote unquote, because they weren't on any of the major streaming platforms. You either had to find it on SoundCloud, or you had to go on YouTube, or you had to already have it because you had downloaded it years ago. But he's decided to put all of these songs together and put them out so that his fans could have them on every single streaming platform this Friday, which I think is just a really cool thing to do, because the people who follow Drake know, like, so many of these songs, people are like, how the hell did this not make an album? You know, and in this streaming era where everything is at the tip of our fingers, it becomes more and more tedious to, you know, find these things on command, so that Drake tidied this up to put stuff like Draft Day and 4 p.m. in Calabasas and Club Paradise with Rick Ross and Girls Love Beyonce, which is a song that I hate, and I'm pretty sure is the worst Drake song I've ever heard in my life. But whatever. Nonetheless, people like it and it's on there. Just a variety of stuff. Obviously, Twitter and the Peanut Gallery made the obvious joke of Drake finally puts out a classic album, Hardy Har Har Har. But yeah, man, it's one of those things. It's coming out on Friday, but we can recommend it because we've already heard all of these songs, which I think is just a really cool thing. He did it earlier this year with So Far Gone. Or was that last year? I don't even remember. But he put So Far Gone out, every single thing, onto the streaming sites. And so he put this out. I actually I actually found this. I actually knew this news last week. I had learned it from a friend of mine who knows them. And he was like, yeah, Drake's actually putting out or whatever. But I was drunk at a party when he told me this, so I forgot. So I didn't leak it as I should have. But such a wise thing to do. But like, yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it. I know all of his fans are. So, you know, there you go.
Lost tapes times, man.
Thank you guys for listening to us, man. We really appreciate that. Peace and much love to you all. We out.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Perfect, guys. All right. Later.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more. Made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.